Welcome to the Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this February the 3rd on the West Coast, now February the 4th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. I'd like to also welcome those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world. We appreciate you helping us get the word out, and whether it's live or in an archive, we really, really appreciate your participation in the show. Lots of wonderful comments about the last show I did last night with Ken Adachi and Z.S. Livingstone. We revealed some false flag events that were either all going to occur in the United States, as well as an event that occurred in Israel, in Jerusalem, and it was captured by someone on videotape and posted to YouTube. There were actually two genuine videos of the event from different perspectives, one far away, another one from an opposite angle, about 180 degrees different, and much closer up. A little bit of a jittery picture, but nonetheless captured what we described on last night's show. Ken Adachi has posted a little explanation with that. And the individual that shot the video, from what I read on his YouTube page, the viewer messages that were there, he was claiming that these were the Nephilim of the Bible. And I hate to disagree with that gentleman, but that's not true. And Ken Adachi told me that he has amended his explanation to what we brought out. So I find that rather interesting. anyway, if you haven't seen the video of the Jerusalem event, you can probably just find it by saying, Googling Jerusalem UFO, and you should see something there. The lady who took the picture or the video of the opposite view of the event is an American lady from Mississippi, and she made the comment, oh, we see those all the time, and it's been confirmed that she does see those all the time. We don't have to talk to her to know that, though. She shared some information that happens to be true. Simple as that. Now, I thought I would start tonight's show off a little bit in a different vein from what I usually do. It doesn't mean we're not going to play any music or anything like that. I received an email from someone who I can only presume is a black-booted, agitating thug who probably works for the NSA. One word in the whole email is capitalized, the word sir in the salutation, and the name of J.S. McCain II. Every other sentence begins with lowercase letters. Certainly, if you listen to this, this is the best they can do to counter the truth. And so I'm going to call this portion of the show Your Tax Dollars at Work. Your Tax Dollars at Work. The email is from a gentleman calling himself B.D. His email address, Buddha Boys, and he spells Buddha Boys, B-U-D-A-B-O-I-Z, at yahoo.com. Okay, it's a bogus email address. Today's date. And it's addressed to me. I'll give him credit for finding my email address, but that shouldn't be too hard to do if you work for the NSA. Here's the email. I thought I would read this to you, and I read into it a little bit more than what's in the email. Hello, sir. I was reading your bio of the McCains, and he uses the possessive McCains with the apostrophe S. I'm confused by the published death date of J.S. McCain II, 22nd March 1981, by others. I was a Navy corpsman assigned to Balboa Naval Hospital, San Diego. By the way, the hospital's name is Naval Medical Center. It's adjacent to the Balboa Park. He was in the Officer's Ear, Nose, and Throat Ward in 1978. Vice Admiral McCain was a patient there. He had prostate cancer, diabetes, and one destroyed eye. He died in 1978. At least this is what I remember. No remembrance of the month. Thank you. Now, these are your tax dollars at work, and I suppose we could call the sender of this email Larry. Larry failed to disclose that he is suffering from one of these three-letter diseases that you see on the infomercials on TV. HSM, it's called. Hyperactive sphincter muscle is that disease. And here's a short story about Larry.
I'm having all the fun in the world. Larry's not with us anymore. He went on, you know. Yeah. He bit the big one. Well, he's got his own little piece of head.
Bye.
I'm sure you recognize that sound. That's Earth, Wind, and Fire. That's The Way of the World. Seemed like the appropriate song, really, to follow the Larry saga with. I may do this more often, too. Usually, these things hit my junk mail, and I have the option to delete them if I choose. And before I hit delete tonight, I said, no, I'm going to share this with my audience. This is, it's pathetic, the lengths that the jackbooted thugs will go to try to waste one's time. But we got a little bit of entertainment out of it. I hope you did too. The song we just heard was produced by the late Charles Stepney. I thought I would point this out to my listening audience. He was a very prolific musician and producer, arranger, and songwriter. He had a group that he founded out of Chicago many years ago. The Orchestral Psychedelic Soul Sound was credited to him, which became sort of the signature of Cadet Chess Records in the 1960s and into the 1970s. And he also did some producing for Ramsey Lewis, jazz piano player and funk piano player, and Maurice White, who was the leader of Earth, Wind, and Fire, got together with him, and they produced a really, really beautiful album. I think the song I just played is one of the best that Earth, Wind, and Fire did, and certainly has Charles Stepney's mark on it. He worked with the Soulful Strings, Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, Marlena Shaw, if you've ever heard her, what a beautiful voice. Terry Callier, I already mentioned Ramsey Lewis, Phil Upchurch, great jazz guitarist out of New York, The Emotions, Denise Williams, and he even worked with Minnie Riperton and the Rotary Connection. Minnie Riperton died of cancer at a very, very young age. She had the voice of an angel, and many of today's modern R&B stars actually pattern their style after Minnie Riperton. Mariah Carey uses her falsetto to sing in the range that Minnie Riperton could sing in her natural vocal range, to give you an idea how great she was. These people are a great loss to our culture, to the art of music, and to our country, because they bring people together with very profound and spiritual messages in their music. Certainly Earth, Wind, and Fire is a group like that, and Charles Stepney was such a producer and a member of the musical family, shall we say the galactic musical family. Tonight's guest has been waiting patiently in the wings. He's a frequent guest on Evident Footprints. He's an environmental scientist. He is an historian, a former chemist who had worked for IBM. And he's an herbalist and a musician, my good friend, Michael Anthony. Michael, welcome to the show. Well, Michael, I'm not
Hey, good morning, Don. Thank you. Great to be back.
Were you muted?
Hey, Don. No, I wasn't muted, but great to be back. Thank you.
All right. I thought we had lost you there for a second. Okay. Glad to have you back. Your impressions on that song I played.
Old Earth, Wind, and Fire. Letter, that is definitely a nice tune.
Yeah. Larry's email. Any thoughts on that?
Well, if he's actually NSA, I wish he was on the show. I got some questions to ask NSA guys, in particular, with their activity in Antarctica, which is a real major suppressed secret as far as what exactly is going on down there. Something very, very wild is happening down there, and that's not in the news at all.
Yeah.
And NSA is right in the thick of it. So why are they there?
Well, do you want to share that with the audience, or are you going to keep that a secret too?
Well, essentially, Antarctica has some anomalies, and there's a place called Lake Vostok, which is basically in the Russian territory. All the main nations of the world have bases there, as well as the North Pole. And nobody really provides a clear explanation as to why would that be. I mean, if they're just frozen land masses with nothing there, why are all the nations of the world so keen on having military bases there? And so Lake Vostok itself is a lake that's not frozen. It's under the ice. The ice is like a canopy over it. Maybe a couple years back already, it did break out in the news that American scientists were being flown back from Antarctica, and they were all very sick. And I don't know if you recall that, but a little bit did leak out regarding something going on down there, but then it was immediately hushed right up, and no follow-up, of course, from the media on any of that. And so supposedly, these guys were checking out Lake Vostok or Vostok, and so along with the lake, though, being an anomaly, a major anomaly, there's also something going on down there where they've been detecting a tremendous magnetic responses, and apparently that can only be due to like some kind of metal. Incredible amount of metal existing beneath the surface of Antarctica. And so we can't get an explanation as to what the source of all these magnetic anomalies are, indicating that there seems to be some kind of a tremendous amount of metal material situated down there. And it must be due to some kind of structure. Now, are these structures related to something from antiquity, or are they modern? Are they associated with the Nazis' New Schwabenland? And so that's going on, and NSA's in the thick of it, and we're not able to really get any further information out of that, except anybody going through that area just happening to be exploring on their own, they will be immediately arrested and confined if they step into that vicinity.
Now, have you heard if Al Gore has plans to go down there and figure out what's going on? I mean, Antarctic warming, right?
I doubt unlikely that this is going to be anything Al Gore's limited intelligence will be able to handle.
He could take the new internet down there and create a new database.
Well, you know, there are ponds down there with a lot of algae, so algae himself would fit right in, actually.
Well, if you think we're being serious, folks, especially you, Larry, no, we're not. We're just joking. You know, there's the story of Admiral Byrd, and the history books mention him going down there for quite an extended period of time. Mm-hmm. And on a show I did with Jim Murray, oh, maybe 3 or 4 months ago, we were talking about Admiral Byrd's, let's say, his excursion, if you will. They went down there with a whole, let's say, a fleet of destroyers and submarines and all kinds of boats.
And, that's right.
And they came back after 6 weeks, according to the research that Jim has done and the networking he's done with other researchers who really investigated this for a major part of their life, and said something scared the dickens out of him while he was down there. And, of course, those things are covered up, we know. Any thoughts on what he might have seen?
Operation High Jump you're referring to, Don, and yeah. that was a very extensively planned operation. They went down with major equipment to roam across the frozen wasteland of Antarctica, and there was a lot invested into this. And they did come back very soon, prematurely, and apparently, one of the things that he came back with was a report that they were getting a lot of magnetic anomalies in that continent area, and they couldn't figure out what it was. And in addition, it was reported that Operation High Jump had come to a fast conclusion because they encountered a force down there that pretty much beat them up bad. When they came back, it was supposedly with their tails between their legs. And yeah. They did go down there with a strong military force. And so what was it that managed to beat these guys up pretty bad? Now, also along with this, Admiral Byrd did mention, supposedly, he did mention that the next war will be an unbelievable type of war with technology because of these crafts that can fly through the sky and cover the earth in just a matter of minutes.
Yeah, most likely he discovered an underwater base then.
Well, this is it, Don. This is what we have to speculate on. Is it a Nazi base? Is it a base from antiquity still in operation? And this is, these are the two plausible answers, but we don't know exactly which one is. Is it a combination of both? Did the Nazis settle New Schwabenland because of their previous explorations? They're discovering as well this city from antiquity intact and maybe inhabited, and they moved right in alongside with them. I mean, that's also a possibility. So we don't know the answer to that. Admiral Byrd did go to the North Pole prior to the South Pole, and a few years prior, and he also was claimed there to have discovered an opening into the interior of the Earth. And he went to the North Pole by air, didn't go by sled or by water. He went by air, and supposedly flew right into the interior of the Earth. And so based on that and then sending him down to the South Pole a while later after the war to verify the South Pole, what was he there also to verify that there was an opening there as well, most likely. And so that's pretty much what we know on Admiral Byrd and Operation High Jump. And as well as what we know about what's going on right now in Antarctica, there's also a lot of seismic activity in Antarctica, and it's believed that we may be bombing whatever it is buried under the crust down there. Because of the seismic activity, it's not normal. Looks like detonations of some type. And as it turns out, it apparently all started around the time we had the Iraq War invasion with GW. And so some even speculate, like if you study Henry Stephens' work, Hitler Suppressed and Still Secret Weapons, Science and Technology book, some even believe that that was just a cover war for this real activity of a potential war scenario going on down in the Antarctic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get, there's so much disinformation out there that people have to really sort through all this stuff with a fine-tooth comb and a coffee filter, you know?
Well, that's sure. All we can do is speculate on what we do know so far. And what we do know is that there's a lot of activity going on in Antarctica by NSA, which is clearly a shadow agency that controls our government. I mean, it was established by the shadow entities that control our government. And the NSA is a dirty work department. That's all they do is dirty work operations. It's really a carryover from the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
And NSA, Nazis, I mean, there you go, right there. And the Nazis as well had a national security agency as well. And so NSA being involved down there is what causes a lot of questions to come about, Don. It's not just a geologic exploration and we have with international relations going on down there. No, we all have military bases going on down there, and there's a reason for that.
Yeah. You remember an old movie called The Thing. It was a black and white movie, and there was this tall, bald-headed guy that was The Thing.
The original was starring James Arness.
Yes.
did a remake with Kurt Russell.
Yes, exactly. And that was a lot gorier. But, you know, why do you suppose they put these movies out? This is, of course, these guys are in this sub-zero environment, and they're out of touch with civilization, to use a word that they like to use. And so they're basically trapped there. Whatever's there, they have to deal with it. It's not like they can jump in the water and swim to safety someplace, you know. So
you're stranded when you're in that location.
Yeah, exactly. But are they giving us hints as to what's going on there, you think?
Well, Donna, it's absolutely possible, because a lot of the Hollywood writers are in bed with the CIA, NSA type agencies that are actively involved in all kinds of, you know, quote unquote, X-file.
Mm-hmm.
Subjects. And so, sure, they divulge a lot through their movies. I mean, a lot of the UFO stuff coming from Hollywood, UFO movies, invasion from outer space kinds of things since, what, the 50s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right after World War II. And so what prompted all that? And so no question about it. Whenever we see something from Hollywood and the stories run along lines like this, it definitely will cause you to wonder how much are they really revealing in their fictional story.
Yeah. Now, they did this even way before, you know, in the 1930s, Flash Gordon, if you remember.
That's
Buster,
right.
Buster Crabbe, who was the first Tarzan, and he was an Olympic swimmer like Johnny Weissmuller. You know, they make movie stars out of these people, too. Create idols for people to worship, number one, and then they peddle these stories. And these scripts have recurring themes. You know, we're always under attack. Mankind is doomed. This is to create fear, to create superstition. It's to program, definitely, and to get people to think about these things, but having been affected subconsciously and not even realizing why they're thinking about it. And they just keep coming out with them over and over and over again. They're basically revealing their plans for us.
Well, you know, when you go back to the Flash Gordon series of the 30s, and you wonder why they're coming up with such a fantasy kind of sci-fi kind of storytelling. I would think that they were stimulated by the a lot of the airship mysteries occurring in the late 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was going on there? Who's behind those airships of the late 1800s that were pretty pervasive for a duration of time? And nobody, of course, could give any real explanations as to what was going on. But you could see where they're going to get ideas of, for Hollywood, to come up with sci-fi stories just based on those, all the activity from the late 1800s, which was known as the great airship mysteries, I believe, is pretty much how everybody at that time would discuss it in their articles.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, you know, that's late 1800s. So who's the source of those technologies? I mean, Tesla was just coming up with all this stuff. And of course, by the 30s, Tesla's ideas were very well established as well, which the Hollywood writers could feed off of. Mm-hmm. Tesla claimed to be in contact with Mars. And then he felt that he might be also actually in contact with something within the Earth. And so in the 30s, you not only have extraterrestrial stuff like with Flash Gordon, but you also have stories with pre-Diluvian Atlantis-like civilizations in the Earth,
mm-hmm.
and their activities with the surface men as well coming out in the 30s. I forget what the name of that series was, though.
It's on the tip of my tongue. Well, I wanted to make a comment just about the way, you know, the production quality of the Flash Gordon series. Whenever he was depicted as traveling somewhere in space, they would show a background of what appeared to be clouds or dry ice fumes lingering in the air, and a cardboard rocket with a 4th of July sparkler in the rear end.
And the sounds of an electric razor.
Or
the sound effects.
Yeah, I was going to say an electric razor, possibly a Hoover vacuum cleaner.
Maybe a combo.
But, and then, you know, there was always a woman on the ship, and she would get in the fist fight with the guys, you know, with the antagonist. And it was idiotic. It was stupid. It really was. But this was the overall or the mean intelligence of the viewing audience. And they would show these serials in the theaters. Right.
Yeah. In its day, it was big.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually have some of those. I may play some of them on the show one night just to, share it with the listeners. Because they're treating us the same way today as they treated the scripts and the production of the Flash Gordon series. It's just they've gotten more exotic with special effects and, you know, there's no sound in space. There's no medium through which sound can travel to be audible to a human being. And I'm speaking about the vacuum of space.
Mm-hmm.
Yet when you see the special effects in every movie, when they show a flying saucer or a mothership or some scout ship, or a battleship flying through space, you always hear sound, don't you? And music, of course.
Yeah, Don, and so with the vacuum theory of space, I just don't know how accurate that is as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I can only speculate on that because I'm not sure about that.
I thought you had something more to say on that, but yeah.
No, that's
I was waiting.
Well, you know, we're told that there's a vacuum in space, but mm-hmm. Is that actually the case? Not sure. I mean, there's a lot of evidence indicating that there's a lot of electrical activity in space itself.
Well, let's say a breathable atmosphere is lacking. Okay? Mm-hmm. In that sense, the medium for sound waves to travel. Now, that doesn't mean sound waves can't travel. They would have to take on a different frequency, or possibly just the very nature of space could allow them to travel. But I doubt it. I seriously doubt it. I'm not saying that they're not trying or they haven't developed something. What are radio waves? You know, what are light waves? They can be carrying all kinds of information. Like you said, you know, you can have all kinds of electromagnetic activity going on. It doesn't mean because it's void of atmosphere that this energy can't move. It is moving through space.
That's right.
Constantly. And where there are anomalies that they like to call wormholes or black holes, there's a shape, there's a pathway. It's got to be following some order of some phenomenon that's occurring. So there are limitless possibilities, I would guess, for space. Just look at what's on this planet.
Sure.
Perfect example.
Absolutely. I just don't see it being, static at all. Nothing is static in creation.
It's changing all the time.
That's right. There's energy, clearly energy, active energy in space itself. And so I'd be curious to ask some astronauts if when they're working up there, do they hear any sound?
Mm-hmm. Now, there's always this dichotomy in that the military, the NSA, the Pentagon, NASA, all these official bodies that represent space exploration, they depict events in movies from Flash Gordon up through the day the Earth stood still to Independence Day and all the ones in between. Why do you suppose they show beings from other planets if they don't exist? They keep telling us they don't exist, but they keep putting them in movies. It's a simple question, but
yeah. Well, even along with that, and in addition to that, what's more curious to me is that when the UFO flap, the surge of UFO activity came about right after World War II, late 40s into the 50s, it was basically all the entities, these extraterrestrials, they were all human and benevolent. Okay, now all of a sudden we come into the late 50s, 60s. We start to get more monster kind of extraterrestrials. But you had the day the Earth stood still, which was clearly a human, again, type of intervention from an extraterrestrial. But then as we get into the 70s, into the 80s, clearly 80s into the 90s, up to now, it gets more and more demonic, more and more monster-like with all the extraterrestrials. Now, that's very curious how that's come about. What happened to the humans that were all benevolent that initially came about with all this discussion and reports from supposed witnesses?
Well, they're with the United Galactic Federation now.
Mm-hmm. And so, well, you see, it's all very curious. It really is. And of course, we know that they would want us to be in fear, and they're going to sell their demonic activity as being potentially good. Like, well, maybe they're not humans like us, but they're really good. Maybe they like to suck blood or eat the secretions of animals and stuff. But aside from that, they're really good, and they're here to help us. and at the same time, though,
and they fear, set up fear. The banks for us too. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, it's all about fear, that's for sure. That's how they like it. But there is a obvious push to with all this UFO stuff going on. Like Independence Day was shown a lot on TV. A friend of mine was telling me not too long ago that he goes, it's on all the time, almost every day of the week for weeks. And he says, I think really that they're getting ready to try to prep everyone for some kind of disclosure. And there's something to all that as well. No question about it.
Yeah, I get the feeling that they're because they're repeating what you're describing in other areas too. American movie classics, for example, which is seen on cable and satellite, is basically like pulling a rubber band, stretching it and then letting it go and pulling it again. And every Saturday is John Wayne Day. You know, it doesn't matter if it's cowboy movies or World War II movies. And then they go through a cycle of teeny bopper movies from the 70s and 80s. And then they go into the alien stuff, Alien 1, Alien 2, Alien 3. Then the Terminator series, on and on. That's what programming is. This is what we've been talking about all week long. Mm-hmm. And it stretches your imagination, and then it's relaxed. You go back to, you know, Grandma and Apple Pie and John Wayne movies, where he's the hero and, you know, he's going to slug some guys. He might die in one movie like he did in The Shootist. And in the other movies, he's the hero. And then they go through the Vietnam era movies as well. Apocalypse Now, and there are so many of these movies that they're all continuations of each other. So they're glorifying death and destruction and chaos, moving into uncharted territory. But they're the ones doing the leading, you see. They're leading people's consciousness in these mm-hmm. predetermined directions. And when you look at it, really, I think what they're doing is they're appealing to people in groups, because there are only so many people who are going to watch The Godfather and Goodfellas and all the mob movies over a holiday weekend. And the next time they're on, that same group of people will watch the same movies. And then they go to the John Wayne movies. Then they go to the Vietnam movies. It's over and over and over. Now, many of these cable companies have been taken over by Time Warner. So you have a media company that's always been in bed with the Illuminati.
Sure.
Now programming everybody through the idiot box.
Mm-hmm. Could be a clear pattern of getting everyone mentally conditioned, oriented towards some kind of major external threat, and then come back to the John Wayne movies where we're going to shoot them up. You see, we're going to rally. We're going to shoot them up. We're going to do it John Wayne style. We're going to be able to get motivated and prepared for such activities. I mean, maybe that's, you know, the strategy to it all. But Hollywood is very, very much oriented towards darkness. I mean, that's, you know, that's obvious to everybody. Look at a lot of the movies today are, you know, a lot of demonic stuff all the time. You know, real scary stuff. Not just your mass murder, mayhem kind of nonsense, but also your demonic stuff a lot, or now they're even promoting vampires and werewolves as being cool. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, some really ridiculous stuff out there recently with Twilight and New Moon, where, you know, hey, we're vampires, but we're cool. We're vegetarians. I mean, well, we're not really vegetarians, but we don't feed on people now. You know, we're cool. And hey, this is my mom. This is my dad. You know, we go to school here. I mean, it's so absurd, so ridiculous.
Yeah.
But they really do package it.
They have whole networks that feature in that and in witchcraft, too.
Yeah. And they do package it. They're packaging it for a sale, no question about it, to these poor kids that are easily influenced. And you know, making them believe that this is real, it's part of reality, and that's really pathetic, and no question about it, it's conditioning. But you know, where's all the real good movies coming out of Hollywood, where, you know, you've got good angels kicking the butt of bad angels? You never see that. You never see anything like that. The good angels and the good Lord conquering all kinds of evil forces and stuff through whatever the storyline may happen to be.
Mm-hmm.
And but you never see anything like that. It's always promoting dark entity stuff and selling it like, yeah, they're good, they're cool.
Yeah. And then you have the people that are just watching what's moving for them. You see, the convenience of watching a movie or a video is that it does the moving and you don't have to use your imagination. It mm-hmm. it replaces the imagination.
Those are the couch potatoes.
Yeah, it paralyzes one's imagination.
That's right. It cuts off your thinking processes.
Mm-hmm. And then, so you have people who are not doing any kind of research or historical studies on ancient architecture or ancient archaeology.
That's right.
And you can go to the tombs of Egypt and see in the hieroglyphics depictions of spacecraft and beings from other realms. Looks just like greys. Well, you get the idea. You get the point that I'm trying to make. That
yeah, it's,
well,
the
Book of Enoch is another example. Take it out mm-hmm. of the Bible. We don't want people to figure out what's really going on.
That's right. Absolutely right. That's a powerful book. And they definitely seem to have removed it and suppressed it for a very long time because it's too revealing. And it makes clear that there's a battle between good angels and bad angels, that mankind is caught up in the middle. Enoch himself being the seventh generation from Adam. So he's the seventh. He's the seventh great, 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 great grandson of Adam and Eve. And so he's providing a tremendous amount of information about their time, what it was like, giants roaming around everywhere. In the beginning, everything was okay, but then they just got to the point where nothing could satiate their appetites, all the animals and birds and plants, and now they were eating people because, I mean, they just had voracious appetites, and they were a lot of warlike activity going on. And you had a lot of monstrosity kind of activities back then. But most importantly, it makes clear the fallen angels exist, names them all by names, all the captains, the chiefs. And it makes clear that the plan was in the distant future, Son of God would be revealed to this world to redeem it. It's all in there. And it's clearly a suppressed book. It's a great book and would make a great movie if there was really any creative people in Hollyweird these days. It'd make a great movie.
Yeah, I've had a few people suggest I produce such a movie. So
it'd make a great movie if you can really pull it off, because again, Enoch, and what I really like about Enoch out of all the information in it, because he's the first mortal that becomes an immortal. His great, 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 great grandparents, Adam and Eve, were immortals in the beginning. Then they became mortal. Something happened. They lost their immortality. Enoch is the first of the mortals to become immortalized by God himself. And he's taken with the angels, by the angels to God. And he talks to God one-on-one. And then he's toured throughout the heavenly creations by the angels, so he could see how everything works, more of like the mechanical universe of creation, how everything functions, but the angelic spirits behind all the activities. And he records it all along with the future visions of the birth of the Son of God to redeem creation. And it would make some incredible movie. It really would. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, could you see them taking some politicians, say you take Barack Obama and dress him up like Hopalong Cassidy with the 10-gallon hat, you know, and put him in the movies. Of course, they'd have to attach a teleprompter to the horse's bridle or something like that, you know, so he could read his lines.
Yeah, unfortunately, the politician's done. qualify to be at the level of maybe C-grade actors, not even B-grade. So to see him in a good Hollywood production just won't happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with all the awards going on in Hollywood today, right now, for whatever, you know, all of their works that they're generating there, I think it's time that we see some awards for the politicians, like the Best BS Artist Award. And this award goes to the highest trader of the year 2010, and runner-up, Nancy Pelosi, Hillary Clinton, or the best actor as an American president from a foreign land goes to Barry Sotoro, a.k.a. Obama. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'd love to see stuff like that.
I think my Three Stooges Go to Washington articles would make a great epic.
Yeah, there you
go. And the only problem with that, when you get around to casting the parents and the grandparents, according to the names that they give them, they wouldn't really have to hire any actors, and the audience wouldn't get to see what these people look like because they didn't really exist. There's sort of a dichotomy there. You want to show these things, but these are... Well, I suppose we could make them, we could give them cameo parts as demons, maybe, or invisible creatures.
There's a lot of room there, a lot of room to be creative with all that, Don.
Yeah, and of course, I'd have to give credit to the original Three Stooges for inspiring the research. And we could have them slapping each other, couldn't we? Hitting each other over the head.
Oh, that's right. Oh, wise guy.
Poking each other in the eye. Well, there is a lot of disinformation going out these days, and I keep urging people to use discernment. And I've got another musical message here. You know, this is really an indication of the sign of the times.
Chance his girlfriend came across a needle and soon she did the same. At home there are 70-year-old boys and their idea of fun is being in a gang called the Disciples, high on crack, toting a machine gun. Church and kill everyone inside. You turn on the telly and every other story is telling you somebody died. My sister killed a baby cause she couldn't afford to feed it, and it was sending people to the moon. In September my cousin tried reefer for the very first time. Now he's doing horse. It's June. Everybody see the dawn time. Time. Does the city know?
Prince really had the pulse and the heartbeat of this planet when he wrote that song.
Mm-hmm.
Rocket ship explodes and everybody wants to fly. And he mentioned the dome. Did you hear that?
What was he referring to the dome, Don?
Well, he was talking about the bomb going off and nobody sees the dome. That was kind of prophetic, wasn't it?
Possibly.
Yeah. It was almost, I'm not going to imply that somebody told him to put that line in the song, but it does happen.
I'm not sure what he was referring to on that, but you're referring, of course, to the dome structures on Mars, right?
No, the dome of the rock.
The dome of the rock.
On
okay.
the Temple Mount.
Uh-huh, the most recent incident.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, very interesting there.
Yeah, very kind of prophetic or...
That's done a lot of
society's problems.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, emphasizing that they don't change. They just get compounded.
Well, it's only because, first of all, the music itself doesn't stimulate the change. And that's one of the problems we're dealing with today. You know, the Renaissance, the great period coming out of the Dark Ages of Europe called the Renaissance, when all of a sudden man became highly productive and creative and displaying intelligence, a high level of intelligence out of nowhere. And it's been attributed to the music of the period preceded the Renaissance period. And it's well known that music is the key stimulus to culture. And so it's no coincidence that we're not able to get out of this rut when the music has still been in the same rut all in all. Okay, now, like, a lot of this modern music, if it doesn't stimulate you in a positive, creative way, then it's not really good in my view. And so no matter what, we got to make sure our music is remaining to be very creative, very inspirational, and able to influence not just culture, but matter itself, okay, with that kind of stimulation. And we're not seeing that today.
That's the highest application of music, you know, honoring music theory and even taking and for those listeners out there that aren't familiar with music theory, it explains the who, what, why, where, and when of music, of melody, of harmony, and of rhythm, and how music is structured. This is something that really grew out of the Renaissance period that Michael's talking about, classical music and from the Romantic period and the Impressionist period and onward. Music became, here in America, you know, America's a very young country in that sense compared to Germany or Austria, Italy, and those countries' great composers that composed symphonies and concertos and operas. And that's the sort of thing you're talking about. Now, most people are going to say, opera, do you think I want to dance to an opera? Well, these composers really raised the frequency of the planet when they created that music and when it was performed.
Yeah, like everything, I mean, there's some really good operas. I don't listen to a lot of operas, but I don't really listen to many at all. There's just a few that I like to listen to, but arias, that's a whole nother thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then along with the arias, which were all written by the great classical composers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really that genre of sound that has caused so much great creative stimulation. And so, you know, Don, you mentioned that, well, that's the highest level of music potential. But in the old days, you see, that's what was immediately recognized to be really the only purpose for music. You know, in ancient times, I was watching something on the Great Wall of China a while back, and I was laughing because through the whole show, they never covered the fact that the Great Wall of China was erected for one primary purpose, to keep foreign music out of China. Not for invasions, foreign music. No interlopers were going to easily stroll in with their music and influence the Chinese provinces, because all within the Chinese realm, all the provinces, whatever music was being played, all had to be in the same key. So no matter what province you were traveling to, all music, all the instruments had to be tuned to the same key for a given season, which is incredibly esoteric and really unknown. And apparently, they used a device called the Wang Chung, which some master was tuning from nature. And so as the seasons would change, the Wang Chung would get retuned to that appropriate season, and all instruments had to be in tune to that particular pitch. And so whatever music was being played was always in total harmony with nature. And that way, the Chinese dynasties could endure. And clearly, they did. They lasted longer than anybody else.
Yes. Now, to support what you're saying, their music was predominantly using the pentatonic scale, which is a five-note musical scale. And it follows that pattern of using those notes, possibly bending strings or maybe using a grace note next to the note. But the predominant melody notes used a five-pointed scale. Leonardo da Vinci studied the number five in nature. It recurs over and over again. The phyllotaxis in plants is leaf distribution using the number five. Even the human body was depicted as a five-pointed star, with the arms out to the side and feet spread apart, shoulder width, the head, the fingertips, and the feet being the five points.
Right.
So there was an esoteric or even a metaphysical understanding of those principles. And yes, they did use even a musical system. Theoretically, they used the pentatonic scale. Now, when you displace the pentatonic scale down a minor third or up a minor third, say from C major, playing the pentatonic scale from a minor third below it produces a different starting point, and it gives a minor mode to the music. Mm-hmm. So they could use three distinct modes using a major pentatonic scale. They would have the Ionian mode, the Dorian mode, always still Dorian pentatonic, though, okay, starting on the second tone, or Aeolian starting on the minor third, just as an example. I don't intend to bore people or confuse them with this, but you start on any one of those three notes. Mixolydian is on the third, then you would have the fifth and the sixth. Usually they used the first, second, and third steps, then the fifth and the sixth. So you would have Mixolydian mode and Aeolian mode at the top of the scale. So you could move from a major sounding or major feeling key center to a minor on the second and third steps, or a dominant starting on the fifth step, or another minor starting on the Aeolian or the sixth step. They knew the theory in their own way. They didn't use the Greek terms for the Chinese music, but one could apply that using music theory. You could mimic or simulate, copy if you want, or replicate other types of music. And it's used in Hollywood for effect. You see, it's not that they want to bring out any intrinsic value or have the movie inspire people or influence them, influence their health or their mental state or even their spiritual state. It's used more as a means of controlling the physical body and the heart mind.
Well, you're referring to, I think, there with just soundtracks, general soundtracks, filling in the audio for scenes in movies. But in the old days of Hollywood, they always had great scores for their big movies. Great scores most of the time. It was very important to have a great score. Oh, yeah. With their blockbusters, and they try. I don't know how much they really try today. It's not, you don't see, you don't hear many great scores with any blockbusters today. All in all, well, let me take that back. Titanic, you did.
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
Yeah, Titanic, you did. There was some really nice music there, mm-hmm. But that, it is key. It's very key. Music is so fundamental to quality of life, Don. And influencing quality of life. The kind of music will determine the kind of quality existing in culture, in society. Mm-hmm. And they know that. And that's why music is the way it is today, all in all. And it's getting more and more when I listen to some of the pop today. I can't listen to it too long because it's so robotic.
Yeah.
And of course, that's all their intention. As they try to steer us into more of an automaton type of society.
Now it's funny you mentioned Titanic. I was going to mention that myself. That uses the pentatonic scale.
Mm-hmm.
James Horner used the pentatonic scale. In fact,
there you go.
I can play this here. Now he goes out a little bit right here. He's a passing tone. That's a pentatonic scale, other than there was one F in there, which is the fourth step. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't normally use that. But he used it as a passing tone. So
mm-hmm. Sure.
There's an example of what we were talking about. He actually took a Chinese scale that's fundamental in the cultural music and applied it to sort of an Irish-sounding folk tune. Kind of interesting.
Sure.
So the point is that these scales or these harmonies or these rhythms evoke a certain kind of feeling. When the composers who created this music originally wrote, composed, arranged, or orchestrated their music, sometimes they had what we call in the movie business a ghostwriter, scoring out the parts or arranging the parts. John Williams, for example, would take a simple melody and write it out with the chord changes, and then he would give it to a ghostwriter, and he would write out all the individual parts for the orchestra. Mm. And seldom get much credit.
Yeah, John Williams is doing that. I've never seen him give credit to anybody.
Yeah, and that's not saying that it's not in the credit rolls at the end of the movie, but they show him so fast anymore.
Sure, you can't pick that up.
You know, you'd have to videotape it and pause it or look at the DVD and keep hitting the pause button to read the names.
I was told that when it comes to those credits at the end of a movie, everybody listed had to pay for that. Are you aware of that?
I've heard that before, yes.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Well, they have to finance it, right? And it's considered advertising because if that movie is very successful, somebody said, I want that costume designer or I want that hairdresser that makeup artist. That saxophone player.
Yeah, that's how they're looking at it. You know, they're advertising, but at the same time, it's like you just employed them to work for you on that project.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not willing to just toss it in as a Benny for them for coming through for you. That goes to show how nickel-pinching penny misers those guys there in Hollywood are, I think. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you look at if you look at the classical composers, and I did want to make a point, there are several that come to mind. Chopin is one. He was a Polish pianist, and his career really took off when he was in France. But he had a very tragic life. It seemed like the mainstream music aficionados didn't really appreciate the genius of some of these composers. Another was Mozart. Mm-hmm. Now, Mozart's problems were with the establishment, not with the commoners. The commoners loved his music. So, again, you have sort of a tragic life, and there's this push-pull going on all the time because the composer is just writing, not even publicly proclaiming why he would have composed a piece of music in a certain key or why he composed what he did.
When it comes to composers, generally it's a very emotional type of approach to their creativity. You can hear that throughout the music. And so there's really no need, I don't think, for composers to say, well, you know, a lot of times, for example, you know, somebody may say, well, you know, I came up with this idea while I was thinking along these lines. But for me as a composer, I came up with this music because this is how I was feeling at the time I was playing the instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just added lyrics to it afterwards. It's very rare where I say, well, let me come up. I got an idea for a song and let me arrange some music to it. It's an emotional thing. Usually it's through the emotions. I get creative. And then as I sit back and listen to say, oh, yeah, there's the melody and work out some nice melodic lyrics and approach it like that. And I'm sure that's got to be it is the way for all composers. It's just an emotional experience. And when you play people like Chopin, yeah, Chopin was great. He was very articulate and clearly demonstrated a lot of skill with technique. But for me, Nocturne in E-flat, that's the one I want to play. It's beautiful. And so wherever he was at that particular moment when he came up with that piece, he was in some beautiful place emotionally. When you play some of his other stuff and everything, you know, to me it becomes more erratic. And I could say, okay, where was he emotionally when he was coming up with these? But the Nocturne in E-flat, oh my gosh, that's a stunner. And that's why it's, to this day, it's one of the greatest classics ever. It's such a beautiful piece, very romantic, and just very uplifting. Just grabs the soul, the spirit, and it elevates it. And that's what I love about the great masterpieces. That's the effect it'll have. And even a lot of modern stuff will do that to me, too, the stuff that I really enjoy. Even though it may be loud and it's got a lot of, rock or pop sounds in there, but it's all still such a great arrangement melodically and as well as with the voices. And overall effect is just very, very powerful stimulant in a positive direction. Anytime I hear the number, always feel good. And so often when we're tuning into a lot of the news today and it's all depressing, all fear, 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 you gotta tune out. You can only take so much of it because that's what they're bombarding us with constantly. And that's why when you can feel all the gloom and doom, because that's what they're peddling 24/7 through their media, controlled media. And so you gotta tune out. Lock into those beautiful music pieces that you like, whatever it is for you that stimulates you when you listen to it and you say, you know, I really feel good after listening to that. That's so important for all of us to constantly tune into. Keep in touch with what's going on with the doom and gloom peddlers coming out of Hollywood and out of Rockefeller Center media, but always keep mainly tuned into the inspirational sounds and also ideas through reading, whatever it is, that's going to keep you in a positive frame of mind, mentally and spiritually. And that way, you're always on top of things and never underneath the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we as individuals have to always be focused on, controlling our own space. You want to let in news that's going to affect us in a negative way, but we got to tune in so we know what the latest is. But then when it's just one show after another, you're getting your information from, and it's all the same crap coming out of the traitors and foreign agents operating our government in Washington, D.C., And so it gets very depressing. CNN, on and on. You turn on the boob tube. It's all depressing when you watch their news. That's how they like it. So you can't lock into that. Just touch base with it. Find out what the latest is. And then tune right out and get inspired with the stuff that inspires you. You know, with the winter we're having, a lot of snow, and everybody's getting tired of it. Mike, how you doing? How are you handling the winter? Great. Love it. Even though I'm tired of shoveling, it's a pain in the butt. But all in all, I'm out there just in a T-shirt, shoveling out, enjoying it. I mean, it's fresh air. We had a beautiful blue sky with all that snow. I mean, there's magic in that all by itself. Terrible conditions for anything having to live out in it day in, day out. And you got to go out of your way to look for anybody or anything, animals, anything that needs help in some kind of way. You got to pitch in because it's brutal living in that all the time. We can go inside, kick on the wood stove, and kick back and stay warm and cozy. And we're blessed because of that. But it's harsh conditions. So you got to have sympathy and you got to do whatever you can to help wildlife and anything else that is struggling in that kind of environment day in, day out. But all in all, I mean, just make the best of it. It's still beautiful. Could be worse. We're lucky it could be worse. The weather could even be worse. It's just typical winter for us. And so I listen to my good music all the time. I do my studies all the time. I keep my mind always in the higher regions of thought activity. Not focusing or dwelling too much in the lower regions of fear, gloom, and doom. And you'll find that everything remains all in all creative and always going in a positive direction for us as individuals with our activities. So really good quality music, it's so important to keep us on that track.
Yeah, you said creativity. I was going to mention that a lot of the music that we have today can't really even be defined as music because there are very few musical principles being used.
Right.
It's substituted. It's been forced upon us as a substitution for the real deal to drive down the mean level of consciousness, to paralyze it, to stifle it.
Precisely, Don.
And
precisely. You know, just like they counterfeit everything, they're counterfeiting music. They counterfeited our real U.S. dollar with a Federal Reserve note. They counterfeit God and his good activities with a big government, like Big Brother. They're going to replace God. They're going to make sure life is fine for us. And so they counterfeit light and give us darkness instead in everything they do.
Well, there's a contradiction that's quite evident in that, and that's that everything God has done is revealed to us. It's everywhere.
That's right.
And everything they do has to be planned in secret, in dark rooms, behind closed doors.
Absolutely.
Underground bases.
Absolutely, Don. That's right, because they're counterfeiters.
And secret societies. Exactly. Everything has to be kept from us because we will learn the truth about who they really are, you see. Boils down to that. All of this that we've been talking about tonight, Michael, is nothing but illusion. I mean, in terms of, you know, what's being done to the masses. They're just presented a never-ending sequence of illusions, and the average person can't sort them out, so they prefer not to deal with them. You know?
You're right on the money there, Don, as always. And, you know, with the secret societies, now the real grand secret that was with the real good mystery schools of antiquity, they knew that the average person was in a sleeping state of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
They would swear they're awake, you know, but they're technically asleep consciously. They're unaware of the true reality of the nature of creation that we're dwelling in. Nothing's changed. The masters of deception have continued on with the agenda of making sure that the mass of the population on the planet remains asleep. Now, when those individuals that become enlightened and awakened and realize the nature of things and that there's a controlling mechanism, a controlling force trying to keep us asleep, don't want us to wake up. And so they'll go after them because they're going to be like the sheepdog mm-hmm. going after the sheep saying, hey, come this way quick for your own safety. You got to follow me. This is really what's going on around here. And so they'll go after them and try to shut them down. But the real secret to everything is that there's a magic spell, a black magic spell over the planet that keeps everybody asleep.
And the tool used is alchemy, whether it's actual, chemicals, drugs.
It's magic. Yeah, it's magic. And alchemy is definitely a science of magic. All science is magic. And alchemy is just a knowledge of pure science, the real science or the all chemistry. And they in the past, the great magicians of black magic to keep everybody in a suspended state of sleep, unconsciousness, unawareness, used mainly an alchemical approach. But today they're using technology, which is a new form of their alchemy. With all these technologies and electronics, the boob tube, for most notable example, and then the music, the degradation of music. And so they're using technologies now to ensure and to further advance the sleeping state of the mass of people on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're up to.
Yeah, under the laws of creation, all things affect all things. They affect
That's each
right. other. So this intense determination to drive down the mean frequency of the planet results in a lower consciousness that's being put out upon itself, which tends to drive it down further. Now, there's an understanding that the mean frequency of the Earth has arisen quite a bit, maybe as much as an octave. That could possibly be affected by what's happening in the universe, something that's being intentionally reversed despite this attempt to keep lowering the frequency. In fact, if you create earthquakes, you're creating the lowest of the low frequencies, octaves below the mean frequency. Several octaves, and so that would have a tendency to drive all the frequencies downward. So you have to ask yourself, are they just creating these earthquakes for the purpose of lowering the mean frequency of consciousness on this planet?
Don, at the same time, you've got the flip side coin of the coin, whereas the sleeping state, this black magic spell that is enveloping the planet. And that's all also related to star activity. You know, it's not just from a physical force on the planet doing that.
I understand that. I understand that. I'm comparing it to the universal grid, which is...
Yep, the morphogenetic grid. But at the same time, when you mention that the resonant frequency of the planet has apparently increased about an octave, okay, now... That is probably due to all these new cosmic rays that have been bombarding the planet for the last approximately 45 years. And we're also, as a solar system, the planets in our sun are orbiting a greater sun in the center of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And we're shifting into a new position, and everything's a spiraling, ascending pattern. It's not just a static, linear orbiting activity. Action. It's an ascending, spiraling, vortex-like action. And so this could be done, also causing the earthquakes, as the Earth itself, vibratory-wise, is increasing its rate, and therefore these kinds of changes will come about physically on the Earth.
Yeah, I don't doubt that could happen naturally beyond man's control, but it seems that as even Tesla demonstrated, man could create earthquakes with a very small device. It was a handheld device that fit in a shirt pocket.
That's right. Yeah.
So, and those technologies have been stolen and
sure.
used and developed and redeveloped into all
That's
the
right.
the different modes of technical application.
That's right. The controllers will exploit
weaponized.
Those technologies.
Yeah, and primarily weaponized, you see.
That's right. They'll exploit them as weapons, absolutely, to further subdue and control everything on the planet. Absolutely, and that's going on. However, every time there's an earthquake and stuff, and, you know, when people are all, you know, it's all harp and stuff like that, and, well, I don't know. When my friends ask me, Mike, what is it? Is it, are we doing it? And I say, I don't know yet. One thing is for sure, Mother Nature herself will always be in control.
Mm-hmm.
They're never going to be able to subdue her. And she has her own plans, her own agenda. And we just mentioned that with the new positioning of the Earth and our solar system in the universe, aligning with a greater central sun, and the new energies that are striking the Earth because of that, which are going to cause enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to try to stop that in any way they can. And so... this is where we are currently with the situation on the Earth, and but nothing's going to stop God. Nothing's going to stop Mother Nature, and from achieving the level of perfection and their plans for creation. And you see, everything down here is temporary, because it's an imperfect world. We're mortals. We're imperfect. We're not immortals. As far as being born, we're immortals by design, but we're born to mortals as mortals, and we're all passing through. Everything's temporary. Everything's always changing because everything is temporary. But why? That's because matter itself is not stable, because she's no longer perfect. And I say she because matter in Latin means mother. And so what we're experiencing through the course of our lives is matter trying to achieve a state of equilibrium again, and that equilibrium is really a state of perfection. And that's where everything is ascending back to. And nothing's going to stop that. These dirtbag scum controllers, the Satanists, the Luciferians, the spawns of the devil, and everything that is just hell-bent on subduing and controlling everything on this planet for their own particular purposes, they're going to fall short. Their time is limited, and nothing will stop God from achieving his plan, his agenda, his new world order, which is a state of perfection for the planet Earth, where matter itself is at equilibrium, and where when there's equilibrium with matter, you have peace.
Mm-hmm. You have balance.
True peace.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time already. The time's flying, but yes, I agree with you on that. And if you apply this to what these principles to what's going on in the world, what's being rammed down your throats by the media, it's very easy to discern what's going on when you ask yourself the question, why are they showing this but they didn't show that?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, if it's a false flag event like 9/11, why did we get fictitious images? Why were we bombarded? Why was everyone they spoke to a producer or the wife of a producer from a major TV network? What is it that those people are more qualified to describe than anyone else on the planet? The lies and the script, of course, the behind-the-scenes story. So when you begin to question things in that way, you begin to see the truth. Well, they didn't talk to me. They didn't talk to any of my friends or relatives who may or may not have seen this. But do they get our opinions? Do they? No, they put out the opinions. They put out the information that helps.
Of experts, Don. Experts.
Oh, yeah, these are experts on top of it, yes.
And authorities, Don.
And, you know, while you were describing nature, it dawned on me that, you know, they have the saying, what, do you think money grows on trees? actually, the paper is is made from trees.
It almost does, yeah. Well, but the counterfeit money does. The real money doesn't grow on trees. It's grown in the earth.
Mm-hmm. The roots of the money tree have withered, and the trees are dying.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And it's time to strike up the real growth of money, which are the mines of the earth. But they have to be mined in a proper, harmonious way with nature. But gold and silver, they grow in veins. Mm-hmm. And it's like a plant structure with a main stem and veins emanating off it, much like a plant.
Yes.
So that is curious. You know, money is from a plant, but it's underground, a plant-like structure that's underground.
Yes.
And that's gold and silver.
Yep. Well, we're out of time, Michael. I want to let the listening audience know that you'll be back on Evident Footprints on Tuesday the 22nd. That's an interesting day because that's 5-2s on that day. And that adds up to a 10 or a 1. That's perfection. That number is God's number. So that'll be an interesting show, I have a feeling.
I hope it is. I'll be looking forward to it.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for your input and your wisdom and the work that you're doing. I want to encourage the listeners to take a visit to my website, directlightproductions.com. Click on sponsors and then click on Michael Anthony, and you'll see a page there featuring Michael Anthony's private stock. And that he's not a bootlegger. So check it out.
Far from it.
Exactly. Michael, I want to thank you for being on the show, and I look forward to your next appearance with us.
Great to be back, as always, Don. Thank you. A lot of fun, and God bless.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our guest, Michael Anthony. I want to thank Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting the show. Over at BBS Radio, Seth Hendrick on the sound this evening. I would like to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when scientist and inventor Jim Murray will be my special guest. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light. And have a good night.